The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Before we start the show, it's time for this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. March is all about Easter and Passover at BubbleGenius.com. Head on over to Bubble Genius and pick up their Sweet Jesus Chocolate Jesus Soap. It's a finely sculpted statue of Jesus that looks and smells like chocolate. Not available anywhere else, and it's guaranteed to be sacrilegious. Only $7 at BubbleGenius.com, but if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's BOBANDCHEZ, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now, let's start the show.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Why make trillions when we could make billions?
A trillion is more than a billion, numbnuts.
All right, zip it.
You can't even...
Zip it. Zip.
Look, all
ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Exhibit A.
Number two, would you please back
Look,
me up?
Look, I'm Zippy Longstocking.
I can't...
When a problem comes along, you must zip it. Zip it good.
Fine, would you
please... Kisu hai pindo wa mita hiyo ito. Subtitle, zip it.
I'm just trying
zip.
To...
Zip. Would you like to have a suckle of my zipper?
I want you... Stop.
Zip it.
This...
Zip it.
Oh!
Zip it.
You know what...
Zip it.
You're like a child.
Zip it.
Talking... If you... Just... One time...
Zip it.
Music. That's our middle name. Music.
The Bob and Chez Show. Presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Excuse me, I'm talking.
He's still talking. It is Thursday, March 10, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. I'm Bob, that's Chez right there.
Yes.
We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best soap in the world. That's what it is. If you go to BubbleGenius.com, you can buy all kinds of soap products, including... Oh, it's still to come. I'm told by Paula at Bubble Genius she's working on the Hillary Clinton soap on a rope.
Awesome.
Still trying to come up with a name for it.
Does she have a Bernie Sanders one? And is she giving it away for free?
We're also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. If you need a lawyer, better call Bo. You get free legal advice. Free legal advice. Charles Bowen is the man. Head over to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez or click the link on the podcast page. It's a picture of Charles Bowen at bobseska.com. You can see him on the page. It's on the lower right-hand side. He's sitting on his desk holding an old-timey telephone, waiting to hear from you. He's ready to believe you. All right. Lots to talk about today. It's sort of a veritable cornucopia. Fun in politics today. I want to start out with this news story that's not getting a whole lot of attention today, but it's pretty disturbing. It, of course, anything really truly disturbing tends to come from the red states, and one of the reddest of the red states is the great state of Indiana, where Governor Mike Pence-bot is getting ready to sign a piece of legislation, HB 1337. It's a, of course, it's an anti-choice, anti-abortion bill. But what makes this particular bill particularly dangerous, awful, tragic, is it's not just one particular sort of, you know, we've talked about on the Daily Banter for quite a while, and to some degree on this show, we've talked about how the Republicans are basically pulling sort of a reproductive Jim Crow. They can't make abortion illegal. They can't roll back Roe v. Wade. So what they're doing is they're passing all of this legislation that makes it just really, really difficult to have an abortion. They're not banning it. They're just making it next to impossible. So there's still the availability of it in a sense.
Technically, it's still legal, but, you know.
Exactly.
Good luck getting one.
Technically, it's still there. But now they're passing all these bits and pieces of legislation all across the country, thanks in part to low voter turnout during off-year elections. Thank you very much.
Abortion clinics are not allowed to have roofs.
That's exactly right. Well, this is kind of what they're doing. It's like that, but this bill is that and a bunch of other things. They're just combining it all into one big jumble of awfulness. This bill demands that a woman considering an abortion listen to the fetal heartbeat and view an ultrasound of the fetus 18 hours before the abortion procedure. Only 4 out of 92 counties in Indiana have abortion providers, and the ultrasounds must be done at the same facility the abortion will be performed. That's a lot of traveling and an 18-hour wait. So you basically have to, you know, in some cases, travel across the state, you know, hours upon hours away, and then you have to stay there, ostensibly getting a hotel or waiting in the waiting room for 18 hours away from home, waiting to have this procedure done. This perfectly safe and legal procedure.
Right.
The classic doctor must have hospital admitting privileges clause is shoved in there, too, in case you thought they missed even the slightest opportunity to stick it to women's health. Another aspect of the bill is summarized here in the legislation. It prohibits a person from performing an abortion. Okay, prohibits a doctor or anyone else from performing an abortion if the person knows, if the doctor knows that the pregnant woman is seeking an abortion solely because of one, the race, color, national origin, ancestry, sex of the fetus, or two, a diagnosis or potential diagnosis of the fetus having Down syndrome or any other disability. The operative words there being any other disability. It provides for disciplinary sanctions and civil liability for wrongful death if a person, this is a doctor or a nurse practitioner, etc., knowingly or intentionally performs a sex-selective abortion or an abortion conducted because of a diagnosis or potential diagnosis of Down syndrome or any other disability. Any other disability is a broad spectrum that might force a woman to bring a baby to term who won't survive long past birth, potentially in great suffering, even if the pregnancy is high risk for the mother. Yeah. The bill passed the Indiana House 60-40. But this is a hodgepodge of awfulness. Now imagine your fetus has some heinous birth defect and you choose to abort that pregnancy. The doctor, under this legislation, if the doctor knows that that child has this severe disability and performs the abortion anyway, that doctor could be brought up on charges for wrongful death.
Right.
That is un-effing believable. This is maybe the worst anti-abortion law that I've seen come down the pike since all of this started years and years ago. I remember reporting on the transvaginal ultrasounds a couple of years ago.
That was a good one. That's a greatest hit.
I know. It's the greatest hit. And this actually includes the ultrasound provision in there. But then because the ultrasound provision is so overshadowed by all of this other crapola, it makes you, well, the ultrasound's like the least offensive part of this. That's how bad this legislation is. So obviously, this is going to go to Mike Pence, the Mike Pence bot. And the Mike Pence bot is going to take out his metallic talons and scrawl his scrawl his robotic language across the signature line and turn this into legislation, an actual piece of legislation that's the law of the land. Because it's the land of the free and, you know, we want small government, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Small government invading your vagina.
Yeah, small government.
With a long stick.
Exactly. And now this is one of the first pieces of legislation that, along with some other laws at the federal and state level that include fetal personhood legislation, most famously introduced by libertarian Rand Paul. This is a piece of legislation that criminalizes abortion. I mean, they're just one step away. And, you know, we've read about it before. Actually, they're not one step away. They've actually taken that step into prosecuting women who, for example, in I believe it's Alabama, if you self-induce an abortion, you are held on charges of infanticide. That's actually the law. If you self-induce your own abortion,
Man, that's
a criminal act.
Where are we?
Under charges of infanticide. That's where we are. This is what happens, though. I mean, there's a significant lesson here. And that is that, you know, as we're careening down the road in this primary election and everyone's thwacking each other with various lawn tools, you know, the fact of the matter is I wish we were this passionate about the state and local elections, whether they take place in a presidential down ballot campaign or in a midterm or in an off year election, like the odd number, like this past November. This is the kind of crap that happens as a result of Democrats not showing up when there are gubernatorial elections, state legislature elections,
elections that aren't as sexy as like president.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, Democrats, we need a Pied Piper to drag us out to the polls. You know, 8 years ago it was Barack Obama. This year it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, and you know, and then come the 2017 election, no one's going to give a shit. This is good. Well, okay, well, whatever. I mean, we don't have our Pied Piper. We don't have our cult of personality to follow us and drag us out to the polls. So we're just going to stay home. Harumph. And this is the kind of crap we get.
Yeah, that's something that the right is really, really good at.
They're really good at.
The right is good at mobilizing at every level of government, especially the lower levels of government.
Well, one of the reasons this happens, and I'm not breaking any news by saying this, is because in primary elections, especially during off-season elections, and then those November off-season elections themselves, the people who tend to vote are the people who have the most spare time on their hands.
Sure.
And it's retirees. It's the 65-plus crowd. And who do they vote for? They vote for Republicans.
Yeah.
And, you know, where was a good example? We saw a great example of one of those 65-plus Republicans today at the Donald Trump rally, where Donald Trump, you know, is in this ongoing crusade to have protesters beaten within an inch of their lives at his rally.
You saw it today, right?
Oh, yeah. Both things. The thing that you reported on for the Daily Banter and this guy, this hillbilly with his 10-gallon hat.
78-year-old hillbilly. You heard the interview with him, right?
Oh, yeah. I've got it right here. African-American protesters at the Trump rally. Trump does his normal thing, like, get them out of here, cold cock them, beat them to death, whatever he screams out, ordering his throng, his posse, to destroy whoever dares shout something at Donald Trump. You know, that happens, and then this protester is being led out by security, and as he's walking by this 78-year-old son of a bitch with his 10-gallon hat, this old man cold cocks the African-American protester with his elbow, just gives him an elbow to the face. And who gets tackled to the ground?
The protester.
The protester gets tackled. Yeah,
the guy got arrested. The old guy got arrested.
The old guy still did get arrested.
But he got arrested afterward.
But here's what the Trump supporter said to a random guy after the incident.
Did you like the event?
You bet I liked it.
Yeah? What'd you like about it?
Knocking hell out of that big mouth.
Okay, catching this. Did you like the event? You bet I liked it. What'd you like most about it? Knocking that guy in his big mouth.
Yeah, knocking hell out of that big mouth.
Yeah.
We don't know who he is, but we know he's not acting like an American.
We don't know who he is, but he's not acting like an American. Right? Protesting at a rally held by a would-be dictator.
Yeah, and also
is un-American.
Let's just go ahead and get this out of the way right now. This 78-year-old fucking yokel, Donald Trump doesn't give a shit about him.
No,
wealthy, this billionaire developer from New York City wouldn't piss on this old guy if he were on fire.
I keep doing it on the show. I lapsed into Clint Howard there. I went, no, no business being there. No business. I don't know why I do that, but yeah, I know you're exactly right. Let's continue because it gets worse.
But he deserved it.
Every bit of it.
He said, did he deserve it? And the guy said, every bit of it.
What was that?
Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him.
There it is. Next time we see him, we might have to kill him. There
but
you go.
The next part is the best.
Oh, there's a next part?
Oh, yeah.
That's all I heard. That's all I have.
After that, he said, we don't know who he is. He might be with a terrorist organization. We don't know if he's ISIS.
Did he really say that?
Don't know if he's ISIS. Yeah, he might be with a terrorist organization.
He might be with a terrorist organization. Oh, my God.
God, these fucking idiots.
They are really, really horrible. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, which is that there's a brainwashing that has occurred. These people, I mean, I think 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, certainly pre-9/11, these people would have been relatively reasonable people, like salt of the earth kind of average Joes.
Right. Yeah. And then Fox News just destroyed them.
Fox News just has indoctrinated all these people into hysteria that is now being taken advantage of and exploited by Donald Trump. Donald Trump is basically stepping in. It's ironic that Donald Trump and Fox News are at such odds with each other. The fact of the matter is that Donald Trump is using Fox News as a springboard.
Sure.
He's basically horning in on their brainwashed minions. You know, they've spent a lot of time, brainwashing their cult-like followers. And now he's sort of just, he's co-opting them.
Sure. He knows he knows exactly the crowd to play to. He knows exactly what buttons to push.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what he does. Yep. I mean, he has stepped in, and where the Republican Party and Fox News and the entire conservative entertainment complex has spent years and years feeding these people crap and turning them into zombies. Mm-hmm. He knew it's the perfect pickings for him.
Yep. Yep. The guy
just walks in, and I can totally benefit off that.
And this guy, this 78-year-old John McGraw of Linden, North Carolina, is like, you know, he's like a test case. He's like kind of put him in a petri dish and examine how badly, really, he's been brainwashed by these people. And it's entirely evidenced by the fact that he thought it was okay to sucker punch an African-American protester in a sea of white faces and then accuse the African-American protester of being the one who is un-American.
Of course, absolutely. Because this is how they think.
Jesus Christ!
This is insanity. I mean, this really is Germany in the 30s.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, you know, the trend continues, and this is really going to end in a journalist being killed by a Trump supporter.
Yeah, or seriously injured.
Right, and we have another example of a Trump supporter, and this time it was actually a Trump official, someone from the Trump campaign.
It was Trump's campaign manager.
Trump's campaign manager.
Yeah, Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah.
And this reporter for Fox News and Breitbart, you know, hey, look, maybe you don't like the pedigree, but still, she said that she went to go ask Trump a question and that Lewandowski grabbed her and like yanked her and basically almost pushed her to the floor. And
Jesus Christ.
Breitbart responded. I mean, both Breitbart and the Trump campaign are like Breitbart, the woman, the company that this the outlet that this woman works for, they're circling the wagons and they're saying, yeah, you know what? We don't believe her story. Her story, she might be doing it to get ahead personally. Really? Seriously, you're really saying that?
Yeah, right. I mean, no, there aren't any journalists who are personally ambitious.
Jesus.
You know, I mean, so they said that that Lewandowski didn't believe that Fields worked for, or didn't realize that Fields worked for Breitbart, what you wrote here in the Daily Banter.
Yeah, and even Ben Shapiro was like, so wait a minute, does that mean that it's okay if she had worked for another outlet?
Yeah, that's right. If she worked for NBC News.
Journalists who work for somebody else?
That's right. If she worked for NBC News, he would have given her a shot to the solar plexus or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, but you know, not realizing that she worked for Breitbart. Breitbart reporters get a pass, so it's like, oops, yep. I'm sorry. But in this case, you know, without knowing that she was a Breitbart reporter, guy just let her have it, and I guess she tweeted out a picture of her bruised arm.
Yeah,
which I mean, there's actual bruises there. And there's no reason to me for a Breitbart reporter to fabricate this crap.
No, I don't think so either. And you know what? I'm sorry, but who are you going to believe?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to believe the person who says that this happened. Maybe you don't know her that well, whatever. Or are you going to believe the campaign that regularly assaults people?
Right. You know,
or that participates and encourages the assaulting of people.
Right. I mean, I've got a lot more to say about what's happening on the right versus what's happening on the left, but we got to take a break. We're going to talk about some shaving razors here, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about Jesus Christ. We're going to talk about the differences between what happened at the Democratic debate last night and what's going to happen at tonight's Republican debate right after this. I love Harry's Razor. Hey, if you're like me and you shave your face every damn day, there's no reason why a clean clothes shave should cost a fortune. Shouldn't have to take out a second mortgage to buy razor blades at the store. If you're still buying your razors from the grocery store from behind that protective glass box, you're paying too damn much. In other words, you know, we're buying our razor at the store, we're paying $32 for a pack of blades just for shaving. Seems ridiculous to me. There's really no reason why we should be paying so much just to shave our damn faces. But I'm here with a solution. First, go to Harry's.com, pick up the Harry's Starter Set. It's an amazing deal. For just $15, you get a razor. It's a five-bladed German-engineered razor. Plus, you get moisturizing shave cream and three razor blades. That's going to last you a good long time. I've been shaving with Harry's for weeks now. No razor burn, no cuts, no irritation, just a smooth, close shave every time. That feels great. And don't forget, ladies, Harry's is perfect for your legs and your armpits if you choose to shave those too. Go to Harry's.com and enter the promo code BANC. That's B-A-N-D-C for $5 off your first Harry's shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face or your legs or your armpits with Harry's Razors. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. So, we have another Republican debate tonight. There was like the 180th Democratic debate for the season last night, which I watched in its entirety. And it was, you know, again, I mean, every time I watch the Democrats, I just go, this is the way it should be. This is the way the debate should be, and I almost wish that that someone, one of the networks, would listen to what Sarah Silverman and Bill Maher were saying about making a combined debate, having the two Democrats up there with the four Republicans, and having a big, for lack of a better term, battle royale take place. Right. Yeah. So we can get that distinct one-to-one comparison, the compare and contrast between how the Democrats are comporting themselves versus how the Republicans are comporting themselves. Because I don't think that's been distinguished enough. I don't think we're really getting a full picture from at least the cable news media about how distinct and different, how the Democrats are the grown-ups and how the Republicans are the poop-flinging monkeys in all of this. I don't think that's being emphasized enough, and it should be. But so the Republicans are going to do more of their poop-flinging act tonight. Donald Trump doing his bit. They're all going to be screaming at each other, insulting each other. I assume at some point Donald Trump's going to whip his little tiny dick out. You know, but in terms of the Democratic debate last night, it was one of the more substantive debates. And it's to say a lot. I mean, the Democrats are always substantive, but last night was especially so. There was stuff for both sides to enjoy from last night's Democratic debate. I think, you know, I was frustrated because right out of the chute, Hillary Clinton was kind of pulling a Bernie Sanders kind of thing by painting a very, very negative picture of the economic landscape of Obama's America, which I'm so tired of. I'm so tired of repeating that. It just should be a no-brainer. It's just bad politics to do that. Because anytime that gets said, you know that Karl Rove and the super PACs and even the Republican Party itself, even the campaigns, are excerpting that and getting it ready for a general election campaign ad or a series of campaign ads You know, because, I mean, ultimately, the Republicans, more than anyone else, are campaigning against Barack Obama, even though he's not running. You know, even Chris Christie said we're going to kick Obama's butt out of the White House in November. As erroneous as that was kind of a hint as to how they're approaching their campaign. They're campaigning against the Obama legacy, not so much against Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. It's all about Obama. right? So when one of the Democrats starts painting a negative picture in terms of what the economy looks like coming out of the Obama presidency, I start to bite my nails. And then that's not good. I know you're both qualifying it a lot, but when it gets done, it's really, really nerve-wracking. And really, I mean, it's kind of an amateurish thing to do, quite frankly. It's just bad politics.
Well, you know, I watched a little bit of it. Yeah. And, you know, and I saw it again. I saw Bernie Sanders get asked how he's going to push his proposals through. And do I even need to tell you his response? Two words. Can you guess what they are?
We're going to have a political revolution.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. It's just, I'm just amazed at how, like, the idea that he wants to seriously, like, kind of burn everything to the ground and start over.
Yeah.
Which is not, first of all, it's not going to happen. It's just not the way our system is set up. But more importantly than that, like he sort of seems to discount the Obama legacy, and that really bugs me.
Yeah, I know. And that's one of my big things. It bugs me on two levels. It bugs me as someone who likes and has supported President Obama. The other level is it's just bad politics. It's not only that, well, I don't see what he's talking about here, but I also think it's bad. It's just whether it's really happening or not. You don't go into a Democratic general election by slamming the sitting Democratic president, unless that Democratic president is a nightmare. And meanwhile, there's one thing that's just really, really bugging me. Every time Hillary Clinton's talking. Now, a lot of politicians are guilty of this. We saw Al Gore doing something like this against George W. Bush back in the 2000 election. But every time Hillary Clinton starts talking, Bernie Sanders, for some reason, starts making funny faces. Have you noticed this? He starts making, like, weird smirky faces and like, wildly gesturing.
Excuse me, I'm talking.
Well, look, he wildly gestures anyway.
But, I mean,
I love the comment. I can't remember who the hell said it. I wish I could give credit for this. That at all times, Bernie Sanders looks like he's petting two different sized horses.
We talked about that. And then there's the calling for the check one.
Yeah, he does exactly.
He uses his index finger to make the scribbly.
If he tied his hands behind his back, he wouldn't be able to talk.
I know. But, you know, then again, I'm kind of like that. But when someone else is talking, I'm not still doing it. You know, I'm not like poised to jump in or like, you know, I guess there's something to be said for the debate strategy of that. But it's starting to get really grating. The other thing that that came up that was really interesting was, first of all, I should note that the CNN Univision debate took place in Florida. And what do we know about Florida, Chaz? What population of immigrants resides in Florida?
Yeah, and it took place in Miami, and it was a lot of Cubans, a lot of Cuban Americans.
Exactly. And they're quite
and they don't take too kindly to the idea of socialism.
Yeah, no. And they don't take too kindly to the idea of Fidel Castro or, you know, defending Cuba. And Bernie Sanders in a very uncomfortable moment. It was, and I should say that Hillary Clinton got a couple of really challenging questions along these lines too. She was asked about Benghazi, which resorted in boos from the crowd because it was the same crapola that Hillary Clinton has answered for numerous times. And that she was also asked about emails and just, you know, the same. Oh, she was asked directly, why are you so untrustworthy?
Yeah, I really hate that. I really hate that, you know, I think there was a Washington Post piece today that was kind of satire.
Yeah.
It was like a fake, you know, fake debate for Hillary Clinton. And this person, you know, the article had the moderator asking, why does no one like you? And she's and the, you know, the fake Clinton just run. How would you feel if every like couple of days someone just came up to you and said, why don't people like you? No one likes you.
Yeah. You almost sounded like Andy Rooney there. Why is it that no one likes you?
Right.
Why does everyone think you're a c-?
What's the problem with fruit?
Oh, my God. So Bernie Sanders was asked about his position on Fidel Castro, and they actually played a clip of audio. Really uncomfortable moment. They played a clip of audio of Bernie Sanders talking about Fidel Castro and speaking in forgiving terms. In the clip, Bernie Sanders says, you might recall way back, what was it, 1961. This is a 1985 interview with Bernie Sanders, when Bernie Sanders was my age. It was crazy. You might recall way back in, what was it, 1961, they invaded Cuba, and everyone was totally convinced that Castro was the worst guy in the world, and that all the Cuban people were going to rise up in rebellion against Fidel Castro. They had forgotten that he had educated their kids, given them health care, and totally transformed their society. This was the clip that was played in a room last night filled with Cuban people.
Yeah, Cuban Americans.
All right. Oh, yeah. So here's what's.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there are a lot of younger Cuban Americans who have sort of put their parents' hardline politics by the wayside.
Yeah.
But oh man, the hardliners, it's just shocking. They weren't, you know, comunista, like yelling, like throwing things at him, trying to set him on fire.
Yeah.
Like one of the brothers to the rescue, Cessnas, crashes into the building to kill him.
You know, and I'm no big fan of wheeling out a 31-year-old clip of Bernie Sanders or any other candidate.
I'm not big on that either, except that it is a with Bernie, and this is the thing, that dude, this is the issue. This is the thing that we talk about when we've mentioned that he hasn't actually been vetted yet, meaning the Republicans haven't really gotten their teeth into him because they want him to win. They think he'll be easier to beat than Hillary, and I genuinely believe that were he to win the nomination, that they would be correct. But this is the kind of crap that you would hear. And the thing about bringing it up, about bringing up this, you know, however many year old clip, is that his thoughts haven't changed. This is part of a pattern. It's not like, you know what, somebody wrote a paper, 40 years ago and made this racist comment or whatever. It's not that kind of thing. It's he said this, and then he said this, and then he did this, and he did this, and he still does it up to today.
Well, the other thing, though, is that even though I thought Bernie Sanders acquitted himself quite well during the debate. You know, he always does. He always has a good answer for everything. And he had a good answer on the Cuba thing, although he didn't quite he of course didn't renounce what he said in 1985 about Fidel Castro. But the very fact that they played that clip on a Florida-centric, a Miami-centric debate was really, I think, damaging to any prospect whatsoever that Bernie Sanders could win Florida.
It should be. It really should. I mean, I thought about that because the Cuban American voting bloc, that thing is huge. There's a reason why nationally, politicians have tried to sort of pander to it.
Yeah.
Because it's very vocal, it's very angry, it's very big, and they vote.
Right. Yeah. And right now, according to Nate Silver, which we got to talk about here in just a second.
I don't trust Nate Silver anymore.
I know.
He was wrong on that one thing that time.
According to the polling average on 538, it's looks like 60-29. In favor of Clinton, obviously. That's the polling average.
Right.
And I imagine that that's going to, and I'm saying this, you know what? I'm just barely saying it because let's take a break and we're going to talk about 538 right after this. Okay, let's talk about supporting independent media. For only $1 a month, you can help finance the Bob and Chez show at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's 12 cents per show. Go now to patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez and sign up for $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, or $15 a month, or whatever you can afford. If you sign up for $5 or more, you'll get special Patreon-only shows like our post-mortem wrap-up show, the Not Safe for Work after-party show, and commercial-free, unbleeped versions of the free Tuesday and Thursday shows. Most of all, you'll be supporting a totally independent podcast not affiliated with corporate media. And if we reach our $7,500 per month goal, we'll bring you new shows 5 days a week, Mondays through Fridays. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez or click the Patreon link at bobsesca.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And yes, the second half of today's show is brought to you by the BobSesca.com Amazon link. If you shop at Amazon, enter the site using our link just below the logo at BobSesca.com, and we get a small commission from everything you buy. Costs you zip, zero, nada, zilch, but it helps support the show. Thank you in advance for that. Okay, Tuesday was the Michigan primary and the Mississippi primary and the Idaho caucus, I think. And then Hawaii was thrown in there. And so when we recorded Tuesday's show, it was before the polls started to come in, before there were any returns. And so we didn't know. But, of course, we relied upon the most reliable polling aggregator in existence today. Accurate, I think it's somewhere along the lines of 86 to 90% of the time. In some cases, like the 2012 presidential election, state by state, 100% accurate. There was not a single, and going back to 2008, Nate Silver was accurate with every state except for Indiana, where Obama won by 0.1%, even though Nate Silver had it going to the Republicans. But it was only a margin of 0.1% in favor of Obama. That was the only state that Nate Silver got wrong. So by going into an election and relying upon the forecasts of 538 and Nate Silver, that's a pretty reliable way to go. Even when the election is happening as we were speaking in the context of Tuesday's show. Well, it turned out everyone was wrong about Michigan. It was, I mean, it was a wild, wild swing. The very last polling outfit that fits within Nate Silver's qualifications, an outfit called Mitchell Research and Communications, a sample of 475 likely voters, very heavily weighted, was the last one, so it was the most recent one. They showed Hillary Clinton up by 37%.
Yeah.
Right? Going right into the election. It was March 6th. So
by
that
the way,
was,
do we even have to say it? Yeah. That if it went the other way,
yeah.
If Bernie Sanders were up by like 37% and Hillary Clinton won, oh dear God.
Fraud.
Of cheating.
Fraud.
Of fixed fraud. Right. Fixing. She's fixing the election.
Yeah. Lots of that, and then we'd have our conspiracy theories and all of it.
Yep.
But it didn't happen. Isn't that funny? Now, none of the conspiracy theories popped up after that. Interesting. None of the let's put the entire system on trial kind of garment rending. None of that happened. So, suffice to say, all the polls were wrong, and we looked ridiculous, because by the time everyone was hearing the show, the Tuesday show...
Yeah, we were like, she's going to win tonight.
Exactly. It was already... I mean, the first returns that I saw coming in, the first split, they were showing, I think it was something 52-48 in Sanders' favor, and I'm going, well, that doesn't look good. And then it kept going, and it kept basically staying that way with a margin of anywhere between 15,000 votes and 37,000 votes, and then swinging wildly between those two numbers. And going, this is not changing. This is not. I mean, but as the night wore on, it became really obvious to me, at least, having witnessed hundreds of these elections, that that there's no way. There's no, even with the cities still reporting, blah, 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 blah. There's just no way. Once someone is up by that margin and it's getting that late in the day, the odds of overcoming that deficit becomes slimmer and slimmer and slimmer.
Sure. Absolutely.
So Michigan was really, the polling in Michigan was really, really wrong. And what we have learned since Tuesday is that there were several factors that caused it. It was the fact that it was an open primary and lots of independents swung to Bernie Sanders. We learned that there was, shocker, complacency amongst Hillary Clinton voters, where they decided to switch over and vote
on the
Republican side. Exactly. That's how, I mean, historically, that's how Democrats always lose. We get complacent and don't turn out. Because we think, oh, well, Hillary Clinton's got this, or so-and-so's got this in the bag. We don't need to vote. We can just have fun. We can play grab-ass with the election, which is exactly what happened. A bunch of Democrats switched over so they could vote against Donald Trump on the Republican side. And then somehow Bernie Sanders did very, very well, or better than usual, with African-American voters. Whereas usually he was pulling down like around 17 to 20% of the African-American vote in previous primaries. He ended up getting close to 30% in Michigan, which was enough of a margin to really push him over the top. Now, I guess all of these things combined make up for that wild swing of like 25 points. That where he went from like 20 points down to being 20, I guess in the end, he ended up beating Hillary Clinton by, I don't know, as a point and a half in terms of percentage points. That's a big, big margin to make up. So a lot of that, I think, credit where credit is due goes to Bernie Sanders and whatever momentum he had going into Michigan. I tend to believe, though, that unlike some of the warnings of some of the pundits right now, I don't think, and knock on wood, I don't think this is going to play out in additional states. I think the polling.
I don't think it's going to play out on Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't think.
I think that the states that Hillary is, I think she's pretty much locked into those wins on Tuesday. Now, who knows what goes on beyond that?
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean, Tuesday we've got Illinois and Ohio, both of which are open primaries. So there is the possibility, though. I think after Michigan, you're not going to have that complacency factor. I think all the Hillary people are going to be turning out for this one, not wanting to repeat Michigan again. Right. But you know, it seemed like it was inconceivable for something like that to occur. The Washington Post's Philip Bump wrote something on Wednesday, the day after the election, or the day after the Michigan primary, reminding us that in 2008, there really wasn't a Michigan primary. So there was no real basis to build upon for the polling this time around. All right, so what happened in 2008, if you recall, the Michigan primary, they decided that the Michigan Democrats decided to move the primary up in the schedule to January without the go-ahead from the national party. And so in order to punish the party, right, both Barack Obama and John Edwards decided to stand in solidarity with the DNC and to not compete in Michigan, leaving the entire Democratic primary in Michigan with basically two candidates, Hillary Clinton and uncontested.
Yep.
So turnout was severely depressed. So they're basing their turnout numbers for this election on the 2008 Michigan primary, which saw really, really low turnout when Hillary Clinton was the only Democrat on the ballot. You know, so if they hadn't, pollsters should have factored in for this disparity between 2008 and 2016, and they just didn't. So it was a big, big fail on the part of the pollsters, I thought, and one I don't think they're going to do again. I don't think this is good. I don't think it's going to happen.
We'll see. But yeah, no, I don't think so. But who the hell knows?
Yeah. But this, I mean, as I wrote in the Daily Banter, I don't think that this is any reason whatsoever to question the veracity or accuracy of Nate Silver.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he's not, you know, the guy, it's just what they're doing is they're looking at the math and making prognostications based on the math. There is, I don't really think, and while they are left-leaning, I don't think they have an agenda with what they're writing about. They're not out there to try to shill for one candidate or another. No. They're just looking at the numbers as they're presented by other pollsters. They're not a polling outfit. That 538 doesn't put its own polling in the field. They're just taking and aggregating what's out there, evaluating the accuracy of these polls, and then sluicing them through their meat grinder, their little algorithm meat grinder, and then coming up with forecasts based on that. And however it is, whatever the details of the algorithm, we don't quite know the algorithm parameters, but whatever it is, it's a secret formula for like insanely close accuracy. So this was a major, major exception, but like in an historical sense, like no one had ever seen this kind of swing ever in the history of the primaries, maybe going back at least to 1984. And even then it wasn't such a big swing. I think it was 1984 in New Hampshire between Walter Mondale and Gary Hart, where I think it was Gary Hart overcame a significant deficit to end up winning the primary.
Yeah.
fun. But of course, those of us who do rely upon Nate Silver's forecasts had to eat a bit of crow on Wednesday. And, you know, I know that my Twitter feed was loaded.
Oh, I'm sure. Was H.A. Goodman suddenly taking your bet?
Oh, my God. Let's start about H.A. Goodman. H.A. Goodman has now taken to spamming Twitter. don't know if you've seen his feed recently, but go look at it, because it's basically he takes one thing and then posts it multiple times.
Yeah, no, I have seen that. I've seen him, yeah.
In all caps, his all caps, yep. Like Baghdad Bob, you know, blurts that go out all over Twitter. Not once, but like six times, each with a different hashtag. But it's the same message, just with a different hashtag.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, I guess, how he gets away with it. But just drive me up a wall. Okay, we're going to take one last break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, surprise, surprise, something dumb on Fox and Friends right after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Yep, welcome back to our Thursday show. It's Thursday, right? I always get that wrong. I don't know why. I'm so ready for this primary to be over.
Oh my God, yes, please. Give me the convention. Give me the prolonged violence of both conventions, which is what it's going
to
be.
I'm so ready to focus my attention to the Republicans. The whole primary fracas is just driving me up an effing wall. And it's fun. There's a level of sympathy that I feel for my conservative friend Tom Nichols on Twitter, who is kind of like, I would say Tom is like the equivalent of you, Chez, but Tom is spending all of his time swatting back Trump supporters.
Right.
The same way you're swatting back the Bernie Sanders people.
Yeah.
And it's interesting and entertaining to see similar kinds of things happening in both parties, where there are reasonable people on both sides, like beating back the throngs.
Yeah.
And there's something that's comforting about that, to know that there are still a few sensible Republicans who see the dangers of Donald Trump coming down Main Street, and they know that this is going to be a disaster. This is not the way the Republican Party should go. And so therefore, and of course, it's the same thing with all the Minion that follow along. Because, I mean, Tom Nichols is a professor from the Naval War College and a conservative author and so forth, five-time Jeopardy champion. And so he's beaten back, like every one of his tweets, he's responding to some Trump supporter yahoo from his mentions.
Totally.
And just like, his responses are basically things like, oh, you're just totally naive.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, it's just like lots of that. So it's kind of entertaining to watch that. All right. So moving along here, Fox and Friends, another compare and contrast between, you know, really say what you will about MSNBC and their election coverage and what they do on their air on a day-to-day basis. There is nothing, nothing, nothing. Even when you get into some of our least favorite MSNBC hosts, there is nothing that compares to Fox and Friends.
No, Fox and Friends is the dumbest show on television.
Right. And
it's certainly the dumbest show on cable news.
We've talked about this before. They have a new wife on Fox and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Elizabeth Hasselbeck has been replaced with
by
another blonde named Ainsley Earhart.
Yeah.
Ainsley Earhart is now the new wife on Fox and Friends. And this morning they ran a story about Dustin Hoffman's Soviet Jew ancestry. See if you can pick out why this clip is so effing atrocious. Here we go. From
actor Dustin Hoffman breaks down as he learns his family's history. Listen to this.
People ask me today, what are you? I say, I'm a Jew. They all survived for me to be here.
Wow, the 78-year-old Oscar winner barely keeping it together on the PBS show Finding Your Roots. Hoffman discovering that his great-grandmother survived a Russian concentration camp before she was able to start a life in the United States.
All right. There's the setup. All right. Okay. There's a little more to go here. Okay. And you can only imagine where this is going to lead. The topic is Soviet Jews surviving basically the second Holocaust of the 20th century.
This will be good.
And Fox and Friends talking about this. All right, here we go.
His father had always kept a family history, or that family history, a secret. And that's how he was learning about it through the show and all the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. Fascinating, and how emotional for so many families.
Powerful program. Yeah. All right, Heather, thank
you. See you soon. Thanks.
We can all relate to that, though. I mean, you think about what your grandparents did to give you a better life and what your parents did to give you a better life. So.
Yes. Yes, wow. we can all relate.
We can all relate to having our entire race massacred.
Yes, we can all relate to surviving a concentration camp in Soviet Russia.
Oh, white people have had it hard too. Like, you know, like wasp types.
Sure. Yes, all of our grandparents.
There was that time that Walmart ran out of guns for like 24 hours.
That's right, and you know. Like, most of our grandparents are part of that, you know, the greatest generation. And they went through some heinous things. They went through the Great Depression, some of them. Some of them went through World War II. But very few of them, at least if you're a non-Jew, very few of them went through hardships anywhere close to being in concentration camps.
I know, exactly.
None of us can relate.
Not a chance.
Yeah, and certainly not... Ainsley Earhart's grandparents, who are probably, you know, like baby boomers.
Exactly.
They went through a hard time when they ran out of acid at Woodstock. That was hard. It was hard on them. We can all relate to how hard that was.
When they
was.
Learned that Neil Young left Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Right. Right. And then, of course, one other thing. This guy, for some reason, and this is kind of your territory, Chez, I don't know if this guy was an analyst on CNN when you were there, but this guy, Jeffrey Lord, is driving me up an effing wall.
He was not. No, I mean, I don't remember anyway.
He looks like, well, if you want a picture of Jeffrey Lord, just look at the front of your $20 bill. He looks just like Andrew Jackson. It's very bizarre how closely he resembles Andrew Jackson, who was also psychotic, by the way. Jeffrey Lord was a Reagan administration official, a political advisor for President Reagan. And for the second time in the last 10 days, Jeffrey Lord has tried to conflate the Democrats or liberals with slavery and the KKK. Right. 10 days ago, primary election coverage. Jeffrey Lord was on insisting that the KKK, and this was during the whole David Duke fiasco with Donald Trump, that the KKK is a quote unquote leftist organization.
Oh my God, such bull.
And he arrived to that conclusion by noting that the Democrats were at the time, you know, 150 years ago, the Democrats were the slave owning, were the party of secession, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Et cetera.
They always love to do that. They love to conveniently gloss over the fact that the party swapped.
Yes, exactly. The ideology of each party has slowly over the last 150 years switched so that the Democrats at the time were the states' rights party, were the small government libertarian party, right? They were the ones who wanted the big, bad federal government under Abraham Lincoln to leave them alone to own their slaves. What does that resemble right now? That resembles the modern conservative movement that's driven by neo-libertarianism and states' rights. I mean, all you got to do is listen to a Rand Paul stump speech. All you got to do is listen to Donald Trump, for God's sake.
Yep.
It's all about small government. That was the Democratic Party 150 years ago. The Republican Party was the party of Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was a big government liberal. He went to war against the secessionist South to preserve a strong, centralized federal government. That's not conservative orthodoxy. And I assure you, it's not the conservatives who are lashing out against racism. It's the conservatives today who are saying that racism, well, it doesn't even exist anymore. Because look at Obama. So therefore, because Obama's president, and you'll hear this when and if Hillary Clinton wins, that because there's a female president, there's no more sexism. Mm-hmm. We'll get that too from the Republican side. But this guy, Jeffrey Lord, went on against CNN last night and said something to the effect of, Hillary Clinton needs to apologize for the Democratic Party being the slavery party. It's just like, you know what? You feckless dilettante, crack open a thick book.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I cannot believe that someone would get to the White House working for the Reagan administration as a political advisor and not understand that. Well, the reality is that he does understand that. He's being deliberately ignorant because all of the doofuses like this guy, this Trump supporter, where was it, in North Carolina? Cold cock that guy?
Oh, yeah, totally.
That's the kind of audience he's playing to. Just the ignoramus, brainwashed morons.
Those people are, it's just an entire room full of dumb yokels like that guy.
They just don't know. They're ignorant morons. They're uneducated, they're misinformed, and they've been brainwashed since, what, 1998 by Fox News Channel?
Right.
And AM talk radio around the clock. Ugh. No. No, liberals are not the party of slavery and segregation. Sorry. And if you want to talk about racism, there was racism across all parties. If you were white 100 years ago, chances are you were a racist. That's just the way things were.
Yeah.
No one party had the market cornered on racism. It was just a white thing.
Exactly.
It happened to be more violent in the South, where the Democratic Party or the Dixiecrats still held on to that states' rights origin. Ugh. God, I hate having to explain civics to people who ought to know better. All right, we got the postmortem show coming up in a few seconds. If not, we'll see you on the after party on Friday. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.